Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House. My name is Tim Hetty, and as usual, I got my friend Rod Fox over here.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
Very good. You know, it's not as hot as it was. So.
No, we got a little bit of rain. Certain areas of the state got more than others. I know a little bit north of the Des Moines area, some areas got over 2 inches, which was a welcome relief, but it's still not enough.
It's not even close. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know much about farming, but they tell me that this is kind of a crucial period. Yeah. Because this is when the beans start to form and the corn is forming on the ears.
I also heard the same thing. They're not as optimistic about the yields. And if you've been following the market, which I know you do, you know, corn prices are on the way up. So let's just keep making fuel out of our food.
Close to eight. Yeah, let's keep making gasoline out of our food and see what happens. You know, it's not a popular thing for me, but. It's one of those things, though. I believe in letting market forces, kind of dictate what goes on. Yeah. If you took subsidies away from certain things, they wouldn't be able to survive. And as far as I'm concerned, the subsidies, you know, fine. You're getting, a dime off when you go put ethanol in your vehicle.
Right.
What do you think that's doing to your taxes, for one? Yeah. And if you track your gas mileage at all, you know you're spending that money anyways.
Well, going back a couple of years, a bunch of guys got together and decided that, you know, maybe free market enterprise and a free country was something that we needed.
Right.
I kind of adhere to that idea even today. And, we could talk weeks upon weeks about that kind of information.
I know this is a subject you're passionate about, so let's get off of it.
So let's go back to Midwest Basement Systems. Folks, if you want to get a hold of us, you can contact us through the website at MidwestBasementSystems.com on the About Us section, or on the left-hand side, if you scroll down, you'll see the Around the House tag. That gives you an opportunity to search a little bit more about the radio show, some past shows that we've had, and leave us a comment or a suggestion about a topic that you're interested in.
That's a good point, because that's, you know, that really is where we get our subject matter for this show.
Right.
And actually, I have a whole stack of questions and stuff from homeowners that we need to be getting on, but we're not going to do that this week.
Well, so. You know, and it's hard to believe it's August already.
Oh,
I mean, we were talking, you know, the spring rains are right around the corner, what seems to be a few shows ago, but, it's been a few more back than that. But now, and as we get into it, our topic is going to be, hey, it's just around the corner. You need to be looking at winterizing your home.
That's right. You know, and I think last year we went through our list of 11 tips for winterizing your home, and I think we actually did it when there was snow on the ground.
Yeah, so, we kind of got caught up with a lot of other topics that we were going to, and about the time that we were saying, hey, some of these things that you should be doing, some of the tips, it was almost too late.
Right.
So we decided that, you know what, we're going to get it out there to you a little bit early, start thinking about it. Obviously, you know, we're going to re-talk about it again as the wintertime gets a little bit closer. But there are certain things that even now that you do with, looking at winterizing your home, it's a good time, especially with the weather that we've had, to be able to say, hey, if this is a project I need to get done before the snow falls, start planning for it now.
And, you know, we're going to go through this list, but I believe this list is on the internet.
It is.
On our website.
It is.
I'm trying to find it here. I'm looking.
Well, if you go to the, I think it's a resources, it's on page 3. You have to go down to page 3.
Go to the About Us section
on
the left-hand side, then the resources, and you will find several things in there that Rod and I have put together. So you've got safety tips for severe weather.
Right.
And let's see here. I'm still not seeing it. Am I lying? It's on there somewhere.
It is. It is.
Spend a couple hours going through our website. You know, you've got nothing better to do.
If you wanted to go through our website, it would take you a couple hours. There is that much information, which is, you know, for us, it's been a great benefit to be able to allow the customers and people who are researching to find out more about Midwest Basement Systems and to kind of understand building science. And we're so diligent about talking about building science, and this is a great resource site for you.
And, you know, I heard the other day from our marketing director at Midwest Basement Systems that our website is well over a couple hundred pages.
Right.
And, so, I mean, it didn't happen overnight. You know, we add stuff, and we take a very personal interest in it. So it's just grown to this mammoth information
And Tim, you know, you've been in this for 16, 17 years marketing Midwest Basement Systems from, you know, day one. Mm-hmm. And would you have ever thought, you know, 10 years ago that somebody would have come to you and said the focus that you have to start looking at is what's called social media?
Yeah. You know, I could remember somebody making a statement to me that, you know, Yellow Pages are a thing of the past, okay? And everything is going to go to the internet.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, man, that guy is an idiot.
What's
you
he
know,
smoking?
He is so full of it, it's not even funny. Yeah. Well, you know, we don't do a lot of Yellow Page marketing anymore because it doesn't work.
Right.
You know, nobody looks at it. And, you know, you've got a few kids yourself, like seven or something like that.
Yes, I do.
And they've probably all got smartphones.
Yes,
and
they
I
do.
Bet if you asked them to look something up in the phone book, they couldn't tell you where the thing is or how to look something up.
That's exactly right. They would not know how to look it up.
Right.
So,
you know, the other, well, this sometime back, I guess, I was going to take my daughters to the movie. One of them came up to me and said, we want to go to the movies. So, okay, get your friends over and whatever. You know, go call them and find out when the movie time is. And within like 2 minutes, they're back with their smartphone saying, well, here's the movie times. This is when we want to go and what we want to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so whatever.
Well, times have a change. You know, I've got a quick story, and I think I've told you this in the past. A few years back, my daughter, who is in college now, she was a lot younger, and we were back visiting my parents, and we had a Christmas outing and in a small town I grew up in. My mom had run back to her house, and we were at the local community center. Mm-hmm. And I told my daughter to give her grandmother a call, and she picked up the phone, and she's turned around and looked at me. She had no idea. And she started sticking her fingers in the little holes pushing the numbers.
So it was a rotary phone.
It was a rotary dial phone. And she was pushing the numbers, not realizing that she had to crank it around. So those of you that understand and remember the rotary dial phone days, you'll get a kick out of this. You younger listeners have no clue what I'm talking about. But
I'm 42, and I can remember my parents having one.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
absolutely.
It certainly wasn't. I can remember... You would lease your phones from the phone company.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know? When I went out on my own, the first thing I did was, and then to buy your own phone, man, that was something new. You know, they started selling them in the stores, and you had a touch tone dial phone. Mm-hmm. You know, it was push button, but yeah, it was pretty interesting. She got a kick out of that. You know, got to call her grandmother, and then turned around and said, "Who else can I call?" She had never used a rotary dial phone before, so that was kind of amusing. I guess at that point, I felt pretty old.
Yeah. Funny.
So.
Anyway, so we're going to start down on our list of things that you need to start doing now to winterize your home.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, this is August now. It's August 4th.
Yes.
Okay. So we're only a couple few months away.
That's right. Know?
And with the weather patterns we're having, and it's just sporadic. Who knows? It may come early.
Well, that's just it. I think that based on what the weather patterns are now, and you know, a couple of shows ago, we talked about what the NOAA was talking about, and they're a little change for scenes. So, I mean, if we're going to do anything, we're going to go right from summer, mm-hmm. and it's all of a sudden going to be winter. There ain't going to be much of a fall. Guys are going to be out there harvesting in 90-plus degree weather, you know, because the crops are coming in a lot faster than they normally had been.
Yep.
So I don't foresee much of an autumn. But, you know, we talked in depth with Roger Fausch from Shaw Heating and Cooling. Mm-hmm. And tip number one is a furnace inspection.
Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely.
They're running. I can't remember how many service trucks he said. 20-plus service trucks on a daily basis trying to keep up with the air conditioning problems that people are having because, A, they didn't have services done, and now we're into this extreme weather, and now these air conditioning units are breaking down.
Right.
Well, guess what? Winter's coming, and, you know, we're only talking about maybe a 30-degree temperature swing between, you know, 100 degrees to 70, which is what most people like to have it
well,
at.
Not only that, but if your air conditioner goes down, it sucks, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know, nothing really truly gets damaged
That's
in your
right.
home.
You start dealing with the furnace and you got a temperature swing of somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 60, 70, 80 yeah. degrees. Now you're dealing,
100 degrees.
That's
really.
Right. And you're talking real danger to you and your family. Obviously, you're not going to be able to stay in your home when if it gets below 30 degrees and all the other damage that happens with pipes freezing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, so get a furnace inspection done.
Yeah. And stock up on furnace filters.
You know,
if you've just got like the regular 1-inch thick pleated filters, That filter needs to be changed once a month.
Yeah, and like Roger was speaking about, he said, you know, that just monthly maintenance, just changing that filter can create such a better environment for and allows the efficiency of that unit to actually work so much better.
Mm-hmm. Consider switching your thermostat out to a more programmable one.
Yeah, there's been I know that in the local area, Mid-America Energy has done this with some of the audits they'll give you. You know, from an old rheostat mercury switch to a programmable one, because A, you know, do you need to be heating your house or cooling your house at all times? And these programmable ones, if you're going to be at work, you know, then you know, use it because mm-hmm. A, it saves you energy and lowers your, you know, your utility bills. But, you know, during peak times when everybody's trying to cool their house, you know, guess what? That amount of usage causes prices to go up too.
That's right. And in my house, my meter's actually cheaper during certain times. It's like three times more expensive between 5 and 7 p.m., and the rest of the time it's cheaper.
Right.
I'm on consumer, so nothing's cheap. But anyways, we got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more Around the House. All righty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House. We're talking about our tips for winterizing your home, and this is actually going to take us a couple of weeks to get through.
Yeah.
If you don't think that this is important this time of year, I would rather be doing some of this work this time of year than to be waiting until it's cold and snowy. And
absolutely.
Now, personally, I like the cold better than the heat and humidity. You know, you can dress for cold. You can't dress for heat.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just...
And off of the air, we were talking about these furnace inspection and having your system serviced. Whether you do it, you know, one time a year or a couple of times a year, you know, obviously those people in the HVAC industry are probably going to recommend at least once a year because they're going to check everything. Now, do you want your air conditioning unit tried to be checked, you know, in the middle of January
right.
on a reactive service because your heating system somehow has gone out?
And that's a great point that Roger Fausch made. You know, he's running 20-something service fans,
crews, yeah.
which is fantastic. I mean, he really has – he's got a first-rate operation
sure.
anyways. But, you know, he everything's an emergency. You know, and
that's
these
right.
guys are working buku overtime and everything to
right.
try to get to people when some of these problems maybe could have been headed off in March.
Well, and
you know,
that's
get
just
your air
it.
Conditioner checked in March before you actually need the thing.
Yeah.
You
know. In our industry, we have when we're talking about service calls, we define them by either being proactive or reactive. Proactive, obviously, we want to head off a problem before the problem finds you.
Exactly.
Reactive, meaning that the problem has found you. Now we need to address it. So start thinking in the financial aspects. It's like, well, you know, whatever the service is, you know, 50, 75, 80, 100 bucks, I, you know, depending on what kind of system you're getting serviced or what kind of product, you know, that you have. You know, how much money are you going to pay in the middle of the night during the winter to have a tech come out and fix?
You're going to pay whatever he wants.
That's right. You are, and you're not going to stop until you get somebody to come out and fix it. So, you know, are you going to pay three, four, five times the amount of what a proactive service call would have run you?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we, you know, but it's almost human nature sometimes that unless a person has had one of these issues happen, that society wants to be more reactive. It's like, well, wait till it happens to me. And then it's like, folks, if you want to save money in the long run and get the value of your purchase, I mean, get the years of service out of a HVAC system, which is not a cheap purchase.
Right.
I mean, if you have to go out or if you've never priced one, go out. You're going to spend, you know, anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 to $10,000 or more.
Yeah,
depending
that's
on the
just
size
for
of your
a,
house.
Like a regular size house. If you
right.
get some of these bigger homes that take two
a couple
or three
of
units.
Yeah.
I mean, you could spend $20,000-$30,000.
Exactly.
It's not uncommon at all.
So, I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of like the insurance thing. You just set a little bit of money aside, you know, each month just to, you know, you're going to be paying for
mm-hmm.
A proactive service. You know, it's not going to cost you that much. And again, the whole idea is to find the problems before the problems find you.
Yeah. And, you know, we could talk for weeks about the financial aspect of this, but the fact of the matter is, Rod, how many homes have you been in, you know, just to fix like a sump pump?
Right.
And, you know, nice homes.
Sure.
And they cannot afford a sump pump. They can't afford, they don't have room on any of their credit cards or anything to get
yeah.
a sump pump. I mean, people somewhere, sometimes people are just maxed out.
Yeah.
And, you know, a little advice from Uncle Tim, don't let that happen to you, okay? You never know what's around the corner. You never know. What if your transmission on your car goes out?
You should have an emergency fund.
You should have some kind of backup plan.
Right.
And I think that's one of the problems with this downturn in our economy is that so many people had nothing.
Yeah. No one ever taught them or you know, trained them on how to save money.
Right.
So, but you know, this is one of those things, you know, you're going to be money ahead. Home ownership is maintenance. I mean, it's maintenance on your house. You have to have, it's not just paying a mortgage payment and, you know, and thinking that that's what home, you know, I'm going to be spending to live at this house. You have all of the other aspects of utilities and things like that. But, you know, having an operational HVAC system is going to cost you money.
Yeah. Let's get right back to our list here. We're getting off on a tangent.
Yeah.
But if you've got hot water heat, you know, you need to bleed those lines. Now, I know almost nothing about hot water heat outside of the fact that you're pumping hot water through these tubes.
Right.
And I would suggest that if you have that, that may be something that a service guy should take care of that too.
Absolutely. I would, you know, unless you've got a background in this, you know, an HVAC professional is the person that you want to call again because they can identify those problems before they ever happen.
And one last thing about the furnaces, make sure that all of the flammable materials in your basement are well away from your combustion appliances.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that we just don't think about.
Right.
Because I even had a guy when I lived in Ankeny, I had a friend of mine, and he was in the security service industry, meaning that he put in security systems and whatnot. And he was designing a system for my house. And we go down in the basement, and he had actually had a background in fire and rescue and all this stuff. So he takes a look around, and there's clothes, like, right up by my water heater, you know, and right up by my furnace. And, you know, he asked me kind of, should I go out in your garage, get some gasoline maybe, and bring that down here too?
Just to add to the...
Right. And it never even dawned on me that, yeah, there is flames inside this stuff.
Right.
And clothing is highly flammable, especially some of the materials they're using nowadays.
Right. Your utilities need room to breathe.
Yeah. So we raked all that stuff back, and I had a conversation with my wife and, you know, my then very young daughters. And nobody probably cared, but at the same time, you know, well, I made my voice heard.
Yeah, it's an important safety note, though.
But, yeah, you can't be too safe and don't do something ridiculous like that. So
number two, you know, do you have a fireplace?
Right.
A lot of people have fireplaces. And are they operational? You know, people buy homes that have fireplaces, and they have never in their life, they have no idea what a damper does. They've never got the chimney swept out. They don't know. They've never had an inspection done on it. These are the kind of people that probably are at high risk of having a fire while using their fireplace. You should have someone who's got good knowledge show you how to use a fireplace, how to start a fire in it.
Well, and, you know, if you have a fire or a chimney inspector out, and I've had this done before, so I know this to be true. Now, I was raised, you know, building fires and all this, so I had a good respect for it. But you're exactly right. Some people, you know, and it's not a bad thing. They just weren't raised around it or whatever.
Right.
And they have no idea,
right,
you know, how dangerous this stuff can actually be. Like the first thing on our list here is to put caps or screens on the top of your chimney,
right,
you know, to make sure nothing can get down in there.
Right.
I don't know if I was raised in a house with a fireplace.
Yeah, birds will nest.
Birds will nest down in those things. Matter of fact, it was a fairly common problem for a bird to get stuck down in the bottom of a chimney and not be able to get out.
Wow.
You know, and that's because my dad never really had a screen over the top of it like he should have. So the only way to rescue the bird was to let him down in the house and try to catch the stupid thing and get him back outside. You know?
Well, and but Tim, you know how homes were built. A lot of those chimney stacks were just that. They were fire brick and going all the way up. And you know, you just didn't see the liners in them, you know, like we had. They didn't have them. They were brick or stone. And, you know, with a proper draft in a house, it would flow upward, you know, but now they got a little bit more, you have fireplace inserts, you have dampers and, you know, you have liners, And you again, you have screens. You got to make sure that all of these things are operational and in good working order. But yeah, have somebody come out who's a trained professional in a chimney cleaning and somebody who can inspect, the flashing around the where it comes out from the roof line.
Right.
Because that mortar will start to break down over time, and this is where that creosote will start to collect. And that's what is an ignition source.
For exactly. I think it takes like 400 degrees to get it to combust.
Right.
So, excuse me.
Bless you.
If you've got a crack in the brick and it's filled with creosote and that fire gets too hot, and that air moving up the chimney is too hot, it starts burning right through there. And
right.
Then right on the other side of that brick is your combustible materials, your 2x4s, your whatever else.
Yeah. If it's not in 100% working order, don't use it.
Right.
Just, close it off, whatever you're going to be, and just, let your HVAC system
work. And I can assure you that the insurance is not going to cover you well enough.
Oh, no. No.
Once you burn your house down, especially if there's any tragedy or anything, even if there's no tragedy, everybody gets out okay, believe me, it's not going to be worth it. It's kind of like a flooded basement.
Right.
It doesn't, if there's anything you can do to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, no one wants to go through it with the whole idea of saying, oh, I'm not worried. I'm covered by insurance,
Right.
Insurance only covers a portion of it, so.
If you have a fireplace and it's in good working order, make sure you've got wood.
Yeah. Good dry wood.
Don't go out there in the dead of winter trying to find logs to chop up and,
Yeah.
And most of the time there's services and stuff that can bring that around.
Well, and that's just it. Firewood is firewood. Don't be burning, the Christmas tree in your fireplace or anything like that. That's just not a smart idea.
It's not a place where you can get rid of your trash.
That's exactly right.
We got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more Around the House. All righty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House. We're talking about our 11 tips to winterize your home. And this is on our website, so you don't bother writing this down, especially if you're driving down the road.
Yeah.
Just get on MidwestBasementSystems.com, and, it's in there somewhere. I'm not sure where.
So, do a little research.
Yeah. We'll figure it out for next week. We'll tell them exactly where to go to find this, because we won't get through this in 1 week. So the next thing on our list is to check your exterior doors and windows.
Right.
And this is something we don't think about until we're sitting in front of one of them and there's cold draft coming through.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most popular items to purchase is this window film, to try and help keep the warmth in or keep the cold air from blowing through. Because when the windows were installed or when the building was constructed, there's just not enough air sealing that's been going on or the age of the windows.
And I would highly recommend, if there's actually drafts coming through there, this window film is no answer.
No.
Okay. If there's air moving through, there's also moisture moving through there. Infestation can move through there, bugs and whatnot.
Right. Well, you're talking about, especially during the wintertime, you're talking about the unconditioned cold air coming into your house.
Right.
And, talk about an energy loss.
Yeah. And you got to change that air sometimes, 90 degrees.
I mean,
if it's 70 in your house, and it might be 100 or it might be
10 below. Yeah.
Outside, that's not uncommon here in Iowa.
No, so.
So if you've got drafts and stuff, seal them up, replace your windows, do whatever you got to do.
Right.
If you're going to resort to the window films, fine. I know people that do.
Sure.
But it's just not the recommended way.
No, depending on the age of your home, the age of the windows, there's probably some things you could do. You may reglaze them. You may have to use some urethane to seal them back up and, inspect them. That's the whole idea is check these windows and doors because just over time, there's going to be a little bit of degrading with the, with the glazing or, the urethane starts to peel away and, now you've got an air infiltration spot. These are simple repairs that you as a homeowner can do.
Right.
If you're looking at, my windows are 45 years old, they're old, drafty, rotten, I need to get them replaced. There are things that you want to ask when you're getting a estimate for those windows. Is it an insert? Is it a full window replacement? What do you do to do air sealing around it to make sure that, I'm putting a great window in, but you know, the air's blowing around it like nobody's business. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of questions that you should be asking. Don't just rely on what someone's telling you. You know, again, now we could fall back to, you know, following 10 steps of hiring a contractor on this aspect. But there's a lot of information that is not said.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you don't want to get new windows and realize that wasn't a problem, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you and I have both been into a lot of newer homes where, you know, the homeowner will say, you know, well, the windows all went bad and, you know, X number company is paying to replace them all. When you look at them and you think, now, based on the damage and the information that I understand, you know, the moisture that's been coming around the window is what's caused the damage, mm-hmm. not the window itself.
Right.
So it just wasn't installed properly. There wasn't air sealing done. And so somebody's paying for, you know, poor craftsmanship when the window was installed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly right. Then everybody thinks that window is a piece of crap because it
right.
didn't do the job that it was intended to do. And just the moron that put it in.
Yeah. Doors. I got to tell you a funny story here. A few years ago, I went on an appointment, and I walked up to the side door of this house. Now, it's an older house, but somebody was doing a remodel. Now, you have to understand, putting a hollow core interior door as an exterior door is not a good idea.
Right.
You want to
I didn't even think you could do that by code.
Well, you can't. This was somebody who was trying to remodel a house, and they thought, well, they just go get a cheap door, and they put it. And they put a hollow core interior door as the exterior door entrance. I chuckled, and then I asked them some questions. I said, do you have much? No, my brother and I were doing this, and we thought, well, you know, this is a cheap door, so we put this one on. I said, well, let me tell you, mm-hmm. A, it's an interior hollow core door, and it's not supposed to be used on an exterior because you want to use probably a metal-clad insulated door. You know, A, for safety reasons, a hollow core door you can stick your fist through with little
right.
or no
problem. Or at least
problem.
A solid wood door.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but I said there's a difference between, you know, hollow core doors and exterior doors. And we had a laugh about it, and he's like, yeah, I was thinking it didn't look right anyhow. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, just imagine you're looking at what is like a bedroom door, a mm-hmm. closet door is now the entrance to your house. So we laughed about that. And, you know, I'm sure one of maybe a few mistakes were made during that remodel project. But
so they don't do it all the time.
No. This was just, you know, I think they were trying to flip this house, and they'd never done it before, and they were, you know, cheap to try and see how much they could profit. But, yeah, you know, these are the kind of things that, you know, you have to understand they're proper products to be used. And using an interior door for an exterior entrance was not a good idea. So.
Yeah, I wonder what would happen, you know, I mean, if they once they get to the point that they're going to sell this house, you know, and somebody goes to walk through it, and the first thing they open up is a hollow core door.
Right.
For an exterior, that to me, it's kind of like the old, you know, if our tray tables are dirty, what do you think? How do you think they maintain their jet engines?
Exactly. So. But when we're also talking about windows, one of probably the most overlooked things that people don't pay attention to are the basement windows.
Right.
I mean, you know, when we talk about efficiencies and energy loss, and you know, we look at these single pane vinyl or not vinyl clad, but probably an aluminum clad window frame. They're what we call a contractor grade window. These are not an energy efficient or, you know, what I would call a beneficial window opening mm-hmm. for you if you have that in your house.
You have to understand, you know, in the wintertime, the air in our home is so much warmer than the air outside. We have what's called the stack effect.
Right.
And the stack effect is just nothing more than just the most basic of physical properties. Warm
right.
air is less dense, so it rises.
Right.
So when warm air rises up, what it tries to do is draw in. It creates a little bit of a vacuum in your basement.
Correct.
It tries to draw in air from your basement. And, you know, then it exhausts out through the top of the building. Somewhere in between there is what we consider to be the point of equilibrium,
mm-hmm.
okay, where it's neither drawing in or out. It's just kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
That typically is your main level, okay? So, you know, you really, in a lot of cases, you have to have some wind blowing on the side of the house to create drafts in our living room and stuff like that, like
right.
a ranch-style house like you and I
mm-hmm.
Live in. But in the basement, there's actually a vacuum. So we forget about our basement windows.
Right.
You know, but those are the most important windows in the house because that's where the cold air is infiltrating the building.
It's never more evident than when during the middle of the winter, if you walk down and you know, we do this all the time. We've got thermal guns that we're able to show people what the temperature difference is between their, you know, what's coming in around their box seal and what's coming in around their window. But what a huge energy penalty they're paying to have these inefficient windows. But if you just go put your hand up there, you can feel those cold drafts coming in. Folks, that's not the norm. You don't need that. You don't want that because you're, you know, when you're talking about an energy penalty, we're talking about there's products out there that can stop this or reduce it to the point where you're paying for an upgraded windows because of the energy savings that you have. So besides that, they look a lot nicer. We've got great basement windows. You know, we could talk another day about the benefits of that. But along with the windows, we talk about window wells.
Right.
You know, people put a lot of window wells in. They don't put covers over them. You know, again, what are you doing? You're allowing that the exterior environment to actually come in and get up against those inefficient windows. You know, wells are great to try and keep water, landscaping out of the area of the window because, you know, sometimes they're below grade.
You know, how many times have you gone and looked at somebody's basement, you know, that maybe had a water problem and, you know, there's gutters dumping into their window well and, you know, it's half full of mud and there's weeds and it's a crappy window anyways that maybe is even broke. You know, and you'd love to go in there and put a waterproofing system in, but the reality is that this is where the water's coming from.
Right.
So we kind of, a lot of times, we'll have to back off and say,
"Yeah,
look, if we want to create a water-free basement, we have to do this first."
Right. Well, the ethical thing is to address the issue, which we know to be true.
Right.
Egress windows. You know, there's another issue. Make sure those things are cleaned out, the wells themselves. All wells should have a very easily removable cover. Because during the wintertime, snow is going to get into that well. And that's why we are so against anyone that puts like a casement crankout window in, because you and I could probably manipulate that window if we needed to get out, but, you know, it should slide and swing in.
Last I checked, I think that they were using some casement windows. And do those even meet code?
No.
Because I know you have to have certain openings and everything, but the way I look at it, you know, we like to go, or it's good to go well over and above what code says.
Absolutely.
The egress windows are there for a reason. It's egress. It's an escape out of your basement.
Yeah.
You know, if your house catches on fire, like 90-something percent of house fires are started in the kitchen.
Right.
Most of the time when you walk up the stairs, where are you?
Yeah, you're in the kitchen.
So the stairs are not an option to escape. And I've heard people say, well, I can crawl through that basement window up there. Well, think about that for a second. Okay, smoke starts to accumulate. It always starts at the top and works its way down.
Right.
What are you going to do? Pole vault up through this thing? Give me a break. You know?
First off, are you even going to be able to find it?
Right. Can you even find it? And if so, do you truly think you can get up on there? You know, I know fire is a hell of a motivator, but you know, are you physically able to get out of the building?
Yeah.
You have to create a situation where even a 3 or 4 year old can get out, you know, without their parents helping them.
Right.
So, anyways, we got to get to another break. We'll be right back with more Around the House. Alrighty, welcome back, Iowa. You're listening to Around the House, and we're talking about things to get your home ready for the winter. And it's really tough to think about that when it's 100 degrees outside, right?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. But you know what? Just like we said, spring and summer are right around the corner. Now winter's right around the corner. So get out there and start shopping for Christmas now.
You know, and how many times, I mean, last year we had a pretty mild winter. I remember having my motorcycle out on like January 3rd or 4th or something like that, like 65 degrees, which, you know, I'm a snowmobiler. You know, I only ride motorcycles because you can't snowmobile year round.
That's right.
So I was a little disappointed in the winter.
Well, but you know what? With Iowa winters, I mean, here was it, 2 or 3 years ago, we had, you know, record snowfalls.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, stuff that was reminiscent of back in the early 70s. And now we're going through this, you know, what they call a drought and, you know, extreme temperatures. And, you know, we're in Iowa. It's going to be, you know, don't plan on it being the same every day.
And there are weather cycles.
Yes.
So, you know, I suppose what we're doing to our environment may have some impact on it, but there are also there's weather cycles, you know, and eventually we're going to have, you know, huge rainfalls and the farmer's going to be complaining because there's too much water.
Yeah. If you can predict the weather accurately, give me a call because I would like to get next week's lottery numbers from you.
That's about what it means. Anyways, we were talking about doors and windows real quick, and you made a good point at the break. You know, don't forget about your basement windows. Those are as important, if not more important than any other window in the house.
Yeah. I mean, there's a true energy penalty. You know, there's a safety issue. I mean, I've seen some contractor grade windows that have gone in and I, with one single hand, have been able to pull it right out of the frame, when it's sitting in the frame locked. I shocked a homeowner one day. I said, do you know anything about these? She's like, no. And I said, let me show you. And I, you know, just reached up, I grabbed the whole window and I just pulled it straight out. And she looked at me and she said, you are kidding me. And the house was like 2 years old. I said, no.
So when you say contractor grade, you're talking about they've sacrificed quality to get a good cost-effective product.
Right. I mean, they literally put a window in that they could call a window. But, as soon as I showed her that and I said, you know, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but there are certain security aspects of people being able to easily get into your house, and having one of these kind of tension clip windows was not a good idea. Mm-hmm. So, you know, did she buy from me? Absolutely. She, you know, she upgraded her windows because she, you know, she saw the benefits and, you know, of the window itself, but just the security aspect for her, she just said, I will not be able to sleep comfortably knowing that somebody could just push against my window with little or no effort and actually be able to get into my house.
Right.
So.
And then, you know, you have to think about your entire home, and we're getting off on a huge tangent here, but this needs to be said. You have to think about your entire home as a system.
Right.
You know, and the system built of little systems, like your HVAC system. That's part of the house system.
Right.
When we talk about basement windows, we're talking about the rim joist system.
Right.
Okay. Which is not just your windows. Everything up in this area, your rim joist is what sits on top of your wall between the wall and the decking of the first floor. And it's usually, 10 inches?
Right.
And it's just, it leaks like a sieve, usually. Yeah. That's why you see a lot of people packing fiberglass and stuff up in there.
Right. You'll see fiberglass batting that's stuffed up in there as an attempt to isolate and insulate.
And, fiberglass is an okay insulator. It's not great. You can move air through fiberglass. That's one of the huge problems with it. They try to make it denser and denser and denser to cut down on that. But the fact of the matter is you can move air through fiberglass.
Right. There's a much better product out there for this.
I mean, there's a number of much better products out there. I would recommend some kind of spray foam because like a closed cell foam.
Absolutely.
Then you're getting a good insulation that can't be permeated by air.
Right. When we talk about a closed cell, it's a very dense foam, typically a one or two part foam. But the issue, the benefits of it is it is an air sealant. The foam will expand into and close off the gaps that a normal insulation batting would not do. But it becomes very rigid, very thick. And the R value, you know, typically is about 6.5 for every inch. We always recommend a minimum.
Is it that much?
Yeah. We always recommend a minimum of a 2-inch depth, which gives you an R13. Mm-hmm. Now, R13 in some areas of the home isn't going to be enough. You know, we know up in the attics that we want an R factor much greater than that because of the huge energy penalty we pay through the stack effect. Yeah. But the bigger issue than the R13 is the air sealing.
Right. That is going to bring that up. You know, the stopping air is huge. It is huge. Right. And we've said this a number of times on this show. If you go around your entire box sill area and add up all the little cracks, or, you know, this one has a pipe penetration maybe that wasn't sealed up completely around it. You add up all that stuff. Maybe if there's any cracks in the block wall, or, you know, you're probably going to come up with about a 6-inch square opening.
Right.
You know, like you left a window open.
I mean, and would you do that on a normal daily basis? No, you wouldn't.
Right. But you're doing it in the basement usually.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, after we've been able to show and explain the benefits and show the temperature differences with our thermal guns, you know, people see, and that's probably one of the best technological advances that we've had is the thermal imaging guns for the people in that industry to be able to show people what they can't see with the naked eye. You know, where the true energy penalties in their homes are at. And, you know, I know it's become a real asset for those people like Roger. You know, when they look at showing a customer where the benefits are for the kind of systems that they install and things that they can do to try and help, we know that in the wintertime with a thermal imaging gun, because I've done it with one, how blue it gets around the base of your home, because that cold air is really, really just flowing right through that rim joist area.
Right, and if you don't think you're paying through the nose on that one, you're out of your mind.
Yeah,
and you know we had Roger Fausch on here 2 weeks ago or something like that, and he just made some great points. You know, I mean, even with the ductwork, you know, you're losing, what did he say? It was some staggering amount percentage-wise, like 60% of your energy isn't even getting where it's supposed to
be. They said, you know, just from duct leakage, the average home being built right now is just from day one is a minimum of 25 to 45% of the directed airflow from duct leakage is you have that kind of a loss. I mean, think about that. For, you know, 25 to 45 cents of every dollar that you spend is not making it to the vents that you want it to come out. Now, you know, there's some argument about thermal, you know, boundaries and how it, but you know what? I don't live inside the cavities of my walls. I live in my room.
Right.
That's where I want the airflow to be. So there are several products out there, and one of which he spoke about is as far as it's called AeroSeal, to be able to seal up the duct. But even then, the problem is the craftsmanship during the cold air returns is not typically ductwork. It's
are you drawing air out of your basement?
Right.
And then throwing it through the furnace.
Right.
And then back into the rooms upstairs. There's so many things that
It's a drywall cavity between two rooms. I mean, these are the areas where you're probably not going to be able to seal them off. You know, are they isolated to, and you're not drawing from the attic. So there's plenty of things to learn about. But you know, spray foam is a great product to, you know, around the rim joist to try and help eliminate.
I've seen people use wet spray cellulose. Matter of fact, we used to be a wet spray cellulose contractor. Mm-hmm. We didn't particularly care for it, so we got out of it. But you know, that's where they take cellulose insulation, which is basically crunched up newspaper.
Right.
And they send it through a tube, and then it gets hit with a spray of water on each side, and it packs itself in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good product. And anybody that, you know, if you have never had a home energy analysis, I highly recommend either call Roger or call Craig Beveridge down at
Des Moines Heating and Cooling,
and have somebody out that really understands these things.
Right.
You know, because there might be simple things, and you're just losing so much energy because of it.
Right.
So, yeah, we've got two more minutes. We get off on these tangents. So,
well, last but not least, you know, I do want to just touch one more time about the Mudfoot River Billies Carp Tournament that's coming up on August 25th up in Perry. Midwest Basement Sisters is a great supporter of this to benefit some kids in the local area that suffer from cystic fibrosis. There's information on the website, our website, about that as far as upcoming events.
There's a link to get over to that, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And there's a, you know, there's a PDF file that we'll talk about it. You can pre-register, all the information's on there. But, you know, if you haven't heard about it, we're going to, I think in a week, we're going to have some of the key.
Next week?
Next week we'll be talking about some of the key participants, the people that are intimately involved in it, one of them being your brother. It's a great, great project that they got going for this, so it's an annual event.
Well, and that's and I know we donated a John boat or something like that, so they're raffling that off.
Right. I mean, there's plenty of things. There's going to be a bake sale. You can you know, there'll be prizes for, I think, the heaviest stringer, biggest fish.
Then all the fish go to feed the eagles.
That Avian Society's bringing down a bald eagle. So if kids have never seen a bald eagle up close, you know, there's a lot of great information. Check it out on our website at MidwestBasementSystems.com and the upcoming events.
Okay. And if you need to get a hold of us, just feel free to, number one, get on our website again, MidwestBasementSystems.com, or you can call us at 289-1606.
And if you're out of the area, 800-556-5697.
Or you can just stop right on in. It's 5153 Northeast 17th Street here in Des Moines, and we will talk to you next week.